Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Super Retriever Series Behind the Line podcast. I'm your host, David Hamilton, and today we have Nebraska's own Jason Flaster as our guest. We're going to chat with him in a few moments all about how he got into this sport, his dog Cash, and just everything, hunting, fishing, and Super Retriever Series. But first, we want to thank our sponsor, Yukonuba. This podcast and the entire Super Retriever Series is brought to you by Yukonuba. If you want to get the most of your dog in your training sessions, you need nutrition that holds nothing back. Yukonuba's premium performance lineup is built with the nutrients that dogs need to help unleash their maximum potential. That starts with providing energy that matches their efforts, supporting optimal nutrient delivery, and supporting post-exercise recovery. Check out the Yukonuba premium performance lineup and find your dog's fuel at yukonubasportingdog.com. As I mentioned a moment ago, our latest guest here on the Super Retriever Series Behind the Line podcast is Jason Flaster. So, sir, thank you for taking some time to chat with us and let our listeners know a little bit more about you and how you got into this sport.
Yeah, absolutely, David. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to sit here and talk to you today.
And it's a pleasure on my end as well. Really wanted to get to know more about you. You know, I think some of our competitors may know you really well and others may not. We always find out it's really interesting to hear our listeners go, oh, I know this guy real well, or I didn't know that about that guy. So I know that your fellow competitors are going to be listening, and I know some of the fans are going to be listening as well. Let's start with a really simple question. How did you get into the dog game? And a lot of people like yourself who have another job and are not a professional trainer, they're an amateur. Originally, they wanted a dog they could just take, you know, hunting, and then they got interested in the actual training of the dog and started doing that. Is that the same with you, or did you have a different path that led you to where you are today as an amateur competitor in the SRS?
No, kind of a similar path. I actually started off in horses, as well as I know Leo Joseph did as well. And we were highly competitive in the paint horse world. APHA, we kind of went all over the country and showed horses from a very young age. I mean, there's pictures of me on a horse when I was, couldn't even walk yet. And just kind of grew up doing that. And I think that kind of led me into the dog world. I got into hunting. Oh, my dad kind of got me into that when I was 8, 9, 10 years old, and had some family friends that duck hunted, and ended up going with them like one of my very first times, and just kind of got hooked on it. And I can remember watching the Super Retriever series when it came out in the early 2000s on ESPN. And I know Shannon was a big part of that back then. And I can remember watching dogs like Chris Akins Boomer and Achilles and all those dogs, and thinking, man, that would be awesome to have a dog like that. And, or even a dog that even came close to that. And, I can remember watching that and being like, someday I'm going to have a dog like that. And I got my first dog at 16 years old. My mom lost a bet to me. I think I made it to state and cross country or something along those lines. And, she lost a bet and had to buy me a puppy. And, got that dog, and she was just a meat dog, and had a lot of fun with her and had a lot of firsts with her and hunting wise. And I sat along the riverbank a lot of days and hunted with her, and got another dog after that, and kind of took her a little farther and didn't really know too much about the hunt test world or how to get into it or anything like that at that time. And then with Cash, he was my third dog. And with him, I just kind of said, hey, we're going to do this. I'm going to figure out how to get into this. And I met with Andrew, and he actually kind of got me going on it. Andrew Schluter here in Nebraska, he bred the Chris Akins Finn dog, and that's who Cash is out of. kind of got me into it, and I told him kind of my plan, and I don't know if he believed me or not at the time, but I was like, hey, I want a grand champion, master national hunter. You know, I'm going to take this dog as far as he'll go. And the SRS was on my radar as well. I just didn't know if I had enough experience doing it to be able to play this game. And yeah, a couple years after that, I, you know, he was about three, and Cole Scott, who made it to the Crown Championship in 2019 and competed, he had an event here in Nebraska and talked me into coming, and we ended up placing third at that event, only missing first by 3 points, I believe, and missed second by 1 point. So, I mean, it was tight, and everybody came to that first event here in Nebraska. So there were a lot of bigger names here. So it was kind of little starstruck, I guess you could say, when everybody came here and showed up. And, yeah, that's kind of my story and background on what got me into it. I ended up going to the Crown Championship that first year. That was down in Huntsville, Alabama, and we ended up getting second at that. So that was a pretty big entry into the SRS for me and Cash.
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, a lot of people, they come and they just want to, you know, experience the first time. I've qualified for the Crown. I'm nervous. You know, I just want to be here. And then, you know, maybe in future years I can compete. But y'all, yeah, definitely burst on the scene, finishing second in your first Crown. Want to take it back to some of those answers you gave and get a little bit more context here. Let's circle back first to, you had mentioned you showed horses a lot as a child. Is there anything that from another animal, like showing horses, or we've had, you know, some SRS competitors say, oh, I used to, you know, do coon dogs, not necessarily retrievers. Is there anything from your previous experience showing an animal that helps you now compete in a dog game with a retriever? And if so, what is that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the teamwork aspect of it, as far as horses, and there has to be a lot of trust there, and a lot of respect as well, between both. It has to be mutual. Dogs a lot like horses. I mean, they take cues in the whole nine yards, and I think that really helped me. I mean, being able to know animals and being able to read animals. I mean, I think showing horses really, really helped me in the dog world, as far as kind of knowing what the dog is going to do and being able to read them and being able to communicate with them. I think it's helped me tremendously, and definitely one of those things that I wouldn't take back in my life. I had more fun than it should have been allowed showing horses, and I can't thank my parents and my family enough for giving me an opportunity to do some of that stuff at a young age. I mean, we traveled all over. Like I said, we went down to Kansas a lot, South Dakota, Texas, Oklahoma, kind of showed all in the Midwest. And at one point in time, me and my sister were like 1 and 2 in our zone.
Wow.
So yeah, we showed it all the big shows, the World Show, the Congress, and we showed Paint and Pinot as well. So we kind of traveled all over, and we showed the all around, which we started in the morning, very early time, like 7 o'clock in the morning. And we weren't done until sometimes 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning by the time we showed barrels, poles. I mean, because we showed everything. We showed halter, showmanship, and then went into like the equitation classes and jumping. And then from there went to Western riding, reining, and then went into all the game events in the and they ran late into the evening. And I believe at one time my mom said there were like 11 of my family showing at one time.
Wow. A lot of people. So
yeah, it was definitely a family event, and just having that opportunity was incredible.
I can definitely see the correlation there too, from, like you said, like the competing, and maybe that's why, who knows, maybe those early lifehood lessons in competing in big events are the reason that, you know, you weren't scared at that first Crown and were able to go out and dominate.
Yeah, absolutely. It was definitely kind of an incredible experience. I was mentally exhausted after that whole week of running dogs and trying to come up with strategies to put the dog in the right place to come up with a bird. It was definitely the longest marks that we'd ever seen. I think that second series that they had, the marks came out and they were like 320 yards. That long bird was 430 yards. Short bird, I think, came back in to 400 or 220 yards. And then the go bird was 120 yards and that. I mean, we hadn't ever trained for anything like that. I mean, Cash was only 3 years old at that time, so he went out there and picked three of the marks up clean, including that long bird, and we handled on that 330-yard bird, that first bird out. We handled on that bird, but other than that, I was incredibly proud of him, especially never having trained on anything like that, really.
Quick question about Cash. So obviously you mentioned your first two dogs, the dogs you had before him. It sounds like, correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like they had a little bit less formal training than he had. But how soon did you know, like, wow, Cash can really achieve all these things we want him to? You had said, you know, you'll take him as far as he'll go in all the various different dog games, and he's gone quite far. So how quickly did you say, wait, I have something special here? Or were you oblivious to it because, you know, being an amateur and he's only the third dog you've ever had, you just thought, okay, he's pretty good?
You know, I think at an early, like probably around like 6, 7, 8 months old, it was kind of apparent that there was something there. I mean, his marking was there. I mean, super biddable. Everything came really easy for him. I didn't have any issues training him at all. I mean, everything came real easy for him. I mean, you showed him something and the next day he had it. So it was just kind of one of those things that was incredible to watch. And I mean, we were hunting. I've got videos and pictures of him hunting at 9, 10 months old, and he's swimming out in the middle of the river picking up geese that, I mean, most seasoned 5 and 6 year old dogs aren't doing. So
yeah, that's
it was
crazy.
Definitely incredible to watch. And I mean, he's hunted a lot, from upland all the way to waterfowl and anything in between.
With him hunting at such an early age, I imagine that you've dominated, you know, a lot of competitions, maybe not dominated, but done well on the hunt test or the hunt savvy tests. How did you make sure that he also was going to be able, when you were ready to come to the Super Retriever Series, that he was ready to also do field trials? Cause that's an entirely different skill and an entirely different game. And you have to approach it a little bit different. So how did you make sure that he was a well-rounded dog so that he could also compete well in those field trials?
Yeah, he is a lot better at the hunt savvy and that stuff. He's a lot better at that than he is at the field trial stuff. He still excels at the field trial stuff, but I trained with just quite a few different people. I mean, training with Lyle. I've trained with him a few times and just kind of figured some things out along the way there. I got the chance to train with Dave Roram when he was coming through a couple times. And it's just real interesting to train with those people. They are a wealth of knowledge. And if you're willing to listen and ask the right questions, they will usually help you out. And Clint Avant was one of them. I trained with him last summer, and just seeing how they do things and getting their take on things and what you should be doing is just a huge help.
How much of your training is a balance of taking advice from others, trying to learn from others, trying new things? And then also, you talked earlier about, you know, when you compete with an animal, especially a dog, you need to have that teamwork. You need to be able to read the dog. How much of it is also just your own gut instinct of, Cash and I need to work on this today? Whereas another day you're like, okay, I'm going to talk to some of these people. I'm going to go train with them and learn from them as well. What's that balance like, trying to manage that?
I train with a small group of people, and for the most part, I'll see something and that we need to work on, and I'll come back and try and work on that and try and fix certain things that I've seen that we may not be good at or we may have struggled with in the past, and just trying to move forward from there and trying to fix things. It seems like you're always trying to plug a hole. It's like having a bucket with 8 billion holes in it, and you know, as soon as you plug one hole, there's another one that forms somewhere else, and you're just trying to plug that hole. So it's just always a constant balance, trying to keep them right where they need to be and keep them in that mindset that, hey, this is what we're doing. This is what we need to be working on. And yeah, it's just, seems like you're always working on something. And then, you know, when I go and train with somebody else, I enjoy sitting behind them and watching and learning and trying to figure out new ways to do things, or hey, maybe I like this better. They did this. I like this a little bit better than the way I was doing it. So I think you're constantly evolving all the time and trying to figure out new ways to do things or ways to do things better.
One thing that our amateur handlers all tell me that they like to hear the thoughts of other amateur handlers as well is, and a lot of times it's dependent upon, you know, the job that you may have or the family situation you may have. Some people may have kids, some may not. Some may have an occupation that allows them to go out at lunchtime. Some, you know, they can only go train at the end of the day. But I'm always interested, and I know a lot of our listeners are as well, of how you fit in your training to also balance with your day job. Because as an amateur, this isn't what you do professionally. So how do you find that time, and when do you and Cash most often get to train together, knowing that you still have a 9-to-5?
Yeah, so I am an electrician. So right now, I've kind of got a nice schedule where I work 4 days a week, 10-hour days. And usually at the end of the day, I get off, grab the dogs, we'll go out and train. And I've got one or two people that usually come with me. So I've got somebody to throw birds for me, and they're all amateurs as well. So it's kind of a nice little amateur group to train with. Then on the weekends, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I've kind of got Friday. If I want to go and train with a pro or somebody that's close to me, I can, because they're still training. So it's kind of nice to be able to have that opportunity. And then on the weekends, typically get some bigger setups in, or maybe two setups in a day. And we don't really take days off too much. I usually train about 6-7 days a week. I'll give them a day off here and there. If they're getting kind of to the point where they're like, we're getting a little stale, this just isn't working out, and I'll give them a day off here or there. But for the most part, we're able to. We're training every day.
Well, that's awesome that you also, like you said, because you work those 4-10s, you get that Friday off to be able to train longer on Friday as well. We're talking to Jason Flaster. This is the Behind the Line podcast, brought to you by Eukanuba. If you want to get everything your dog's got, you need nutrition that holds nothing back. To help unleash your dog's maximum potential, check out the Eukanuba Premium Performance lineup at eukanubasportingdog.com. Jason, last year at the Crown, you and Cash finished fourth. Let's talk a little bit about the Crown in 2023 in Shreveport, Bossier City, Louisiana. If you can just recap that for us and let us know a little bit about your performance this past year.
Well, right out of the gate, we didn't draw very well. I don't know how that worked out, but my first dog, I drew number 90. I believe there were 90. Was there 94? Yeah. We drew number 94. And then with Cash, I drew 92. So we didn't have much time in between dogs to really get ready for anything, or really even kind of come up with a strategy, because it was so fast that pretty much ran up there with Booge and ran her. And she ran really well. She's only 2 years old. And what she accomplished last year was absolutely incredible. I'm really proud of her. She ended up qualifying in the spring at our test here in Grand Island, our SRS event here in Grand Island. She ended up leading into the last series, and just, I think she had puppies like 2 weeks after that. So it was just incredible that she even was able to do that. So she ended up leading going into the last series, and then just kind of fell apart on a couple marks and just missed them by a little bit. And that kind of kept her from winning. And Cash ran that event as well. Cash ended up jumping her and ended up getting second. She ended up getting third, and they both qualified. Anyways, back to the Crown. Got Booge up there and ran her. Kind of figured out a couple things, but it was so fast that didn't really have any time to do anything. Ran back and grabbed Cash, came up there. He went out and ran really, really, really well. I mean, ran a really good blind and came back and picked up the marks and didn't really struggle with it at all. He stepped on the left-hand bird, hunted the right-hand bird a little bit, and did really well in that series. And then skip forward to the second series. He did really well, that big field trial series. He did really well, went out and picked up the first bird, hunted the right-hand bird a little bit, and then I just elected to handle real fast on the middle, on that long middle bird, and just get out of there and survive. And then going into the third series with the two blinds, he did really well, and I dropped the ball on that. When they called for the birds and then released, or when the birds went down, you cast the dog remotely. And when I was trying to cast him, he was so focused on the birds that I made a mental error and stepped off the mat and cost us 50 points. And then he ran the blinds really, really, really well. Probably one of the better amateur dogs to run those blinds. But like I said, I cost us 50 points right out of the gate. And then going into that next series, the fourth series, he did really, really, really well. I think he was low amateur score in that series. Just did a really nice job on that series. He picked up the first two marks, stepped on them, and then the last bird, that long bird, he hunted that just a little bit and came up with it. And then going into the finals, that hunt savvy, I made another mental error. I told myself where I was going to put him, and I put him right there. The corridor on that was the two decoys, and you had to be in between them. And he was I wanted to have him on that left-hand side, right next to that decoy there, and that was where I put him. And I told myself I needed to give a left back, and I, for whatever reason, I ended up giving him a right back, and he ended up way over there right, and I couldn't see him. I know on the camera that you can see him, but he got behind the weeds, and being a yellow dog, I had a hard time seeing him, and I know they were commenting on it. Well, maybe he's letting him do that on purpose. No, if I would have seen him, I definitely would not have let him do what he did. But, I mean, if you think about it, and me not blowing a whistle, and what he did was pretty incredible, because he saw that holding blind down there, and he was hunting that holding blind. And when he came out, he was maybe 10, 15 yards from the blind, and I just stopped him, put him on the bird, and picked up the marks. He picked up all the marks clean. I think him and Blaze were the only two to do that in the finals, pick up the marks clean. They just deemed him that he was, that I lost control. And I understand that. I mean, he had a great showing. I'm not disappointed one bit. Just to be in the finals, that thing is truly incredible. There's a lot of good amateurs out there, and I know everybody would have loved to be in the finals. And it was just nice to be back there after a couple year hiatus. And yeah, I'm super proud of him.
Yeah, he was phenomenal. Like you were talking on that fifth series, I remember being there in the tent watching, and we were calling it on the live stream, and we're like, wow, he's going to come out. And he came out, like you said, 10, 15 yards right from where the bird was. So nice recovery there in the fifth series. You mentioned, yeah, in the fourth series, you did have the lowest score among the amateurs with a 20. And in the third series, because you had that 50-point penalty, you had a 127. You ended in fourth place, and that is remarkable. Like you said, for anyone to even make the finals, they should be proud of themselves. But you end with a 410, Blaze and Mike end with a 373. Is there any time that you think, man, if I hadn't got that 50-point penalty, I'd be the crown champion? Or do you just let it go and say, hey, you know what? We'll get them next year.
You know, I beat myself up over it a little bit. It's hard not to think about. I mean, between that and giving him the wrong cast off that dike, when I put him right where he needed to be, it's just a learning experience. Like I said, I take something from every test, trial, SRS, any of it. I take something from everything. And that's just one of those things I chalk up to human error. It's not his fault by any means. And yeah, like I said, had I not stepped off the mat, those 50 points, that wins it for us. Because I can't remember what Blaze's score was, but it wasn't 50 points. He wasn't.
Yeah, 373. So with your 410, if you take that 50 off, you're sitting there at a 360. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was super close. So, I mean, if I don't step off that mat, then he probably wins it. But little things that you kind of try and take from it, he ran super well. And I'm, like I said, I'm not disappointed. I'm happy for Mike, super happy for Mike that he was right there at the end. I know we were giving each other guff the entire time back behind the scenes. And we're always rooting for each other, though. It's it is fun to hang out with all those guys behind the scenes, and we're actually all friends. So I'm super happy for Mike and Blaze. Like I said, we went back and forth. Mike runs a lot of the same ones that I run. So we saw him and Blaze all year. And what he did with that dog was truly incredible. He came here to Grand Island, and I don't know if I think he made the third series, but he didn't make the finals. And then we ended up getting second here, and then going to Habitat Flats, we ran against him again. And I don't know if you could have beat that dog at that thing. I mean, he beat everybody overall, and Cash wasn't far off, but still, yeah, we were right behind him and ended up getting second there. And then skip forward to Arkansas, we went down to Firewater and ran that one as well. Just missed first by a few points, and Blaze was right behind us in third. So, I mean, Blaze had an incredible year. Cash had an incredible year. We ended up being in the top six, I believe, for the overall.
Where are we going to see you and Cash this year in 2024? How many events are you planning on running? And what's your game plan for 2024 to maybe, you know, win the crown this year, or once again get back there and then, you know, be in the finals again?
I mean, I don't have a whole lot of them that are close to me. I wish I did. I actually just entered one in Texas this morning. I am headed down there to run next weekend. That is the one that Keith Hall and Luke Coor put on, the Red River Shootout. So we will be at that one. Then I am planning on running ours here in Grand Island. And then I believe I'll go to Habitat Flats, and I may go back down to Firewater, Sean Jackson's place down there in Arkansas again this year. So like I said, I just don't have a whole lot of them that are close to me. So it's kind of picking and choosing which ones I want to go to and how much driving I want to do. But I do really enjoy it. And I mean, hopefully I can get all three of my dogs qualified for the Crown Championship this year. I've had two in there, but have yet to have three in there. My other little female Shaker, she just missed qualifying this year by a couple points. So it would be really cool if I could get all three of them back down there, and that would really give us a good shot at winning that thing.
Mentioning all three, tell us a little bit about their different personalities. I'm always interested to hear from a handler that has multiple dogs. Oh, you know, this dog's charismatic. Oh, this dog's a little shy. Oh, this one is a jokester. Just tell us a little bit about all three of your dogs.
Well, Cash is super animated at the line. He's a lot to handle sometimes. He wants you to get out of his way, and he doesn't. He's like, just send me. I know where it's at. Just send me. I know where it's at. I don't need you. I mean, he's a good team player, but he has his own thought process on things. He's just got a lot of go to him and really enjoys it. Shaker is a year younger than him. She qualified and ran and actually was leading in 2021, going into the third series. I mean, she had a great first series and had a great second series and was leading and was right behind Stroker and those guys. I mean, we were all the way at the top and, doing really well and got to the big field trial series in 2021. And she just kind of got a little too animated. I think we had a no bird in like every series, so that didn't help her at all. And coming back up there in the second go around, she just was so amped up that she went out there and overran the first bird and just got too hot on the other birds and just kind of couldn't win anything. And she got out there and just struggled a little bit with the longer two birds. But she is just kind of a little nut. She, I call her Squirrel all the time. She's just over the top, always wants to do it. She's great in the house. I mean, she she actually lays on the floor and is one of the nicest little dogs you'd ever seen. You'd never know that come game day, she's just one of the nicest, calmest little dogs you've ever seen. And you start throwing birds and guns going off, and she is just a nut. She really, really enjoys it and is really animated at the line. I mean, if she sees a mark, you know it. Her little feet are going, and she is watching everything. And then my young dog, Bougie, they're all three different, but she is definitely different than the other two for sure. She kind of more statuesque at the line, just sits there and watches real well, not real animated. She absolutely loves it as well. I mean, she is a marking machine and runs blinds really well. But yeah, they all have their different little quirks and different. It's always a challenge to try and train three different dogs that have three completely different personalities. It kind of keeps you on your toes. Always trying to figure new ways out.
Yeah, I imagine that can be really difficult for sure. Final question for you before we let you go. What's your favorite thing about being in the SRS? It sounds like you have good camaraderie with the other competitors. It sounds like you enjoy the challenge of training three different dogs with three different personalities. But what is it that brings you back ever since you kind of got started a few years ago and that you're still competing?
It's honestly the people. I really enjoy all the different people that I've met over the last few years that it really just kind of become your really good friends. I actually almost talk to people more outside of my own friend group and in the dog world than I see them more than I see some of my own friends. So you kind of become friends with them. And next weekend I'm staying with Jim Templeton and Sean Jackson down in Texas and talk to them fairly frequently. And we kind of go back and forth on Facebook. And it's just kind of interesting, the people that you meet and the places you go. All because of dogs. It really has been a great experience to hang out and meet a ton of new people.
Well, I think I speak for everyone at the SRS. I know there's a lot of people that have enjoyed getting to know you as well. And hopefully some of them got to know you a little bit better today here on the podcast, and then we'll come up and talk to you at an upcoming event. Jason, I want to be respectful of your time. I really appreciate you being here on the podcast. I know we've been wanting to chat with you for a while. Best of luck to you. And we'll see you at a future Super Retriever Series event. So thanks for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you, David. I appreciate it.
All right. That wraps up this episode of the Behind the Line podcast. Stay tuned for future episodes. But today, we just want to thank Jason Flaster and all the knowledge that he shared with us here on the podcast. We'll catch you next time.